This is Women Who Lead on 760 WJR with Ann Thomas and Luann Thomas-Ewald. Sponsored by the University of Michigan Health Von Voigtlander Women's Hospital.
Welcome into Women Who Lead. I'm Ann Thomas, and my co-host is Luann Thomas-Ewald, the Chief Operating Officer of C.S. Mott Children's Hospital and Von Voigtlander Women's Hospital. On this edition of Women Who Lead, we're going to highlight six of the 12 honorees from this year's class. Dr. Sonia Hassan Duggan, Founding Director of the Office of Women's Health at Wayne State University. Karen Arendowski, the owner of IF Metalworks. Mickey Maynard, longtime journalist and expert on the auto industry. Carol Zuniga, the CEO of Hagira Health. Kelly Walgamuth, the Vice President of Pure Michigan. And Dr. Ora Peskovitz, the President of Oakland University. A great show honoring the first six of 12 Women Who Lead honorees. Coming up right after these messages. Welcome into Women Who Lead. I'm Ann Thomas. We kick off today's show with Dr. Sonia Hassan Duggan, Founding Director of the Office of Women's Health at Wayne State University. She's pioneering an initiative that addresses the maternal and infant health crisis in Michigan.
We have got really, for the first time, we're able to bring together the experts in the field in the state of Michigan to really fight the problem of maternal and child health crisis that we have.
Tell us how you became interested and so passionate about maternal health.
So I did my undergraduate degree at University of Michigan and then did my medical school training at Wayne State University. I then stayed on there and did my residency and my fellowship training and was very fortunate to have a lot of opportunity to do research in the space of pregnancy health and became very interested in this work specifically when I did a fellowship in maternal fetal medicine at Wayne State University. And we really saw the worst things that can happen in pregnancy. Pregnancy can be either very happy, you know, or very sad. And we saw a lot of the worst, unfortunately. And so the opportunity to make an impact in that area really moved me. And also the opportunity to have a unique ability to take care of two patients at the same time.
Something that shocked me during COVID was the process for prenatal care for women had not changed since the 1950s. So in terms of women coming in for their appointments, you know, come in person, you know, 5 to 6 times. So when COVID hit, we were telling women to stay out of the hospital and women were scared to come into the hospital if they were pregnant. And so we worked with our teams to say, how can we redesign prenatal care really quickly and, you know, implement technology and virtual visits. And we sent high-risk mothers home with blood pressure cuffs so they could monitor their own care. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, how you sort of took the barriers out of 12 different organizations on stage a couple
of
weeks ago.
And organizations.
A lot of competing organizations. And, you know, everyone just, gloves are off, and we need to do what's best for our women in the state of Michigan.
So first, thanks for your leadership in doing all of those changes in prenatal care, because that is very critical at the administrative level. Actually, that is how it starts for all of these places. And so kudos to you, really, and all of your team for that. So it started, our big collaborative or network started in COVID, during COVID, actually, when all of the maternal fetal medicine experts around the state and all of these different institutions came together and said, what is happening with COVID and pregnancy in Michigan? We have to know very quickly. So we very quickly formed into a group, a collaborative at the time, to collect data on all of these patients and sort of see what's happening. We did find that patients with COVID had a higher risk of preterm delivery, higher risk of preeclampsia, and the severity of those things all met with the severity of your COVID. So the worse you had COVID, the worse your risk of that. And we had very sick moms at the time. So after that finished, we went through the COVID and came out of COVID. We really said, what is the next thing we want to do? And everyone uniformly said, we would like to tackle the two biggest problems we have now in obstetrics, which is preterm birth, the leading cause of infant mortality, and preeclampsia, or high blood pressure in pregnancy, which is a very high risk for moms and in the maternal mortality risk as well. And really, as you said, the competition, we didn't feel that. We were all just saying, we know what needs to be done. We know the tests and the treatments that need to be done. We've got to do them collectively and really make sure that it's happening.
Now we check in with Karen Arendowski, the owner of IF Metalworks. She's doing incredible work in the metalworks business, and she has a big heart for helping others.
So it started in 2002, and it started off basically as a welding and fabrication, and I decided that I wanted to make it more of an all-in-one through the years. So this is our 23rd year. We opened in April of 2002. And the main thing I wanted was to be able to give back to the community. I consider my employees family. We started off with three of us, and we now have 35 and still need to hire more. And we now basically have just about everything we need in-house, including a powder coat line.
What kind of work do you do? Tell us a little bit about some of the projects that you've been involved in.
Our major project that took 4 years was Michigan Central Station, and that was probably one of my favorites. We did over 130 flights of stairs and railings, aged bronze elevator door skins and surrounds in the main lobby, all decorative mechanical grills, 2,000 square feet, exterior canopy decorative cladding, and the ticket window grills, which is probably my favorite because it has a personal memory for me. My mother said she used to get her tickets at the ticket window all the time. Okay. So it brings a special memory for me. And we're also doing a special project. It's called Hannah's Garden. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. It's from the Oxford shooting. So we're donating a lot of our time to that. And that is another favorite project. It's going to be beautiful when it's done.
Tell us a little bit more about Hannah's Garden. It sounds wonderful. What a nice thing to do.
It is going to be this huge tree made of metal, and they'll be putting everyone's names that, you know, were involved in the shooting on the tree, and it's going to have a running water going through it, like a little river going through it. It's just beautiful. I mean, I'm excited for everybody to see it when it's complete.
So in 2024, your company was named the Macomb County Manufacturer of the Year. Explain to us a little bit more, Karen, about what goes into a company like this.
So we have a welders and fabricators, and we also have CAD designers. We started off, like I said, with welding and fab, and then after COVID hit, a lot of things changed. A lot of people did not have their CAD people anymore. So where we used to do a little bit of CAD, we now had to have a CAD team. So we're still growing that as well. And then our install people, we've installed at Little Caesars and all around Michigan. And so we needed more install people. So we grew the install from 3 people to now we have 12 people. Both of those were hit very hard after COVID that we needed to grow that. We do a lot of decorative metals. One of the things that we are currently working on now that we've finished Michigan Central overall, we are now also doing work at the Henry Ford Estate out in Dearborn. And we've done a lot of work, I mentioned to you, at the Eleanor and Edsel Ford Convention Center as well. And so we do a lot of decorative. We're sometimes the last people to come in. There's another project that we're just completing out in Birmingham at the corner of Adam and Haynes, 5-story condominiums. And we're doing all of the balconies, the railings, even the signage. That became a new project that we do. We've purchased a printer that does ADA as well, and that was a requirement for this job. So we are doing all of the signage for that job as well.
So interesting. I mean, Karen, you're the president and owner of IF Metalworks. Give us the backstory. Have you always been interested in metal, in manufacturing? Wow.
So it started off as a project for one of the big three, as we call it.
Okay.
And we built it in a barn, and it was we had to have 6 prototypes. They accepted it, and then I needed a building. So Jeff is the vice president, and we started it together. And we have been on one of the things that I wanted to do was make sure that we did not only do automotive, that we were very diverse. So I wanted to make sure. So we started off doing restaurant type work and getting more into the decorative metals. And a lot of architects contact us for their jobs for us to quote their work. I like pretty. They tease me that I like to see things pretty. Even the automotive things that we did, watching people building all of these parts on a table was very exciting for me to see that. My background actually has been in the medical field for 25 years prior to that, and I also worked for school districts and in the advertising and public relations department. And then this just came up all by accident, and I was like, okay, can I do this? And 23 years later, we have grown every year. We've been extremely successful, continue to grow our clientele, and we have great clients.
Oh, it's fascinating the way your career path has turned out. When you were a young girl, did you ever envision yourself doing something like this?
No, not at all. I think the thing that probably is the most important about me is that I like to give back to the community. I sit on several boards, the Macomb County St. Clair Workforce Development. I also sit on the AIM. It's the Aerospace Industry Association of Michigan. I sit on their foundation board, and I also sit on their Women of AIM, their committees. We have a budget committee and a events committee. And part of the Women of AIM is to help young women of today down to the fourth grade. We even do a space challenge. It's called the Michigan Space Challenge, to get fourth graders interested and to let them learn about it. So they do everything. We mentor them. They have to come up with a problem in space and how do you fix it. You have to do a drawing and correct, how you're going to correct the problem. They have to have a business plan. So we work with them and teaching them at a young age. And we've had over 119 girls join up for this. This will be our fourth year coming up. And it's exciting to see that. So I'm also the past president of Cruz and Gratiot in East Point. And it was about giving back to other organizations, nonprofits that have issues trying to, get funding. So my kids were raised that way. They were involved with it. And my son works for me, and my son-in-law works for me, my niece and my nephew. It's kind of a family, but everyone here to me is family. I want to see them do better for themselves. So that's my whole goal in my company, is to make sure that we are able to hire people and give them good jobs, good health benefits, and be able to raise a family.
You know, it's interesting hearing you talk, Karen, because two big things come out. Number one, you have a big heart for the community. And number two, you really care about mentoring and bringing young people into different careers that they might be interested in. Talk to us about that. How do you mentor young people who may come to you and say, hey, I don't know what I want to do. Can you help me out?
Yes, the Edward Lowe Foundation, I'm not sure if you've ever heard of them, but I have received several awards, and one of them was Top 50 Companies in Michigan to Watch back in 2009, and that started me on the road with the Edward Lowe Foundation, and part of that is always giving back. One day I hope that I can give back to the Ed Lowe Foundation that will continue to give to entrepreneurs, and if you can see the work that these children did for the space challenge, it's been unbelievable. I mean, it's hard to believe that some of these are fourth graders. And I like to make sure that people are able to feel like they're of worth, if that makes sense.
Sure.
I want to make sure that, when I see my guys in the back working, and women. We have a female welder now, and she does great. But if you see them working and you see them taking pride in their work, then it makes you feel good. It makes you say, I have that aha moment of making sure that something happens. So the Ed Lowe Foundation also helps you to grow that, to see those different avenues that you want to see happen. I want to give back all the time. I did this because I wanted to see people have a job to go to every day and not worry about getting laid off. And I work very hard to make sure that we're constantly reaching out to new customer base and good customer base And we are very fortunate. We've taken this company from starting off in automotive to automotive, industrial, decorative metals, aerospace and defense. And I have a great customer base with that. I'm very fortunate.
Coming up, we'll introduce you to Mickey Maynard, a longtime automotive journalist, and Carol Zuniga, the founder of Hegira Health.
Women Who Lead on WJR, sponsored by the University of Michigan Health Von Voigtlander Women's Hospital.
Mickey Maynard has been covering the automotive industry around the world for several decades. She's highly respected for her keen insight into the business.
Well, right now the auto industry is very much in flux. A lot of the assumptions that we had before the pandemic have simply vanished. And honestly, I think it must be a very hard task right now to be in senior leadership at one of the car companies because it's very hard to guess what's coming at you.
So with regard to tariffs, what do you think? I'm kind of asking you to look into your crystal ball. What do you think will actually end up happening with regard to tariffs for the auto industry specifically, Mickey Maynard?
So we have a bunch of things going on different fronts. We have tariffs against Canada and Mexico and China. There has been talk that the tariffs will be widened to European nations, that they could go farther into Latin America, although I don't think that's as much a threat for the auto industry as they would be if they went wider in Asia. I've heard a couple of interesting scenarios. First of all, it's undeniable that Canada has gotten really fired up. I mean, anyone who lives in the Detroit area who's aware of Canadian news knows that these tariffs have really lit a fire under political leaders in Canada. And we're also seeing impact of those tariffs on the Canadian auto industry. Honda has already announced that it's going to shift some production from Canada down to Indiana. We're all kind of waiting to see what happens with the Detroit companies because Stellantis is one of the companies that has a lot of exposure in Canada. So do Ford and General Motors, and then some of the Japanese companies as well. I think people are kind of sitting tight and seeing how this actually will affect them. This is when we're talking right now. It's in March of 2025, and the tariffs have just taken effect. And there are more tariffs that are supposed to take effect in April. So for the moment, I think we get a little bit of impact on first quarter results. But what everybody will be watching is what happens to the second quarter of 2025 and beyond that. Because the second quarter is traditionally a time, this is a little bit of finance 101, but traditionally the second quarter is one of the strongest quarters of the year for the car makers. The third quarter gets a little weaker because incentives have always come on. And then the fourth quarter was traditionally when you got new model introductions and you could raise prices. So the tariffs will be coming on at a time when the Detroit companies especially do pretty well in the second quarter. And I think everybody is going to be watching to see what the impact is on finances at the car companies.
What about the suppliers? How will they fare with this?
Oh, I feel so badly for the suppliers because, first of all, there is just the logistical aspect of bringing parts across the borders. I'm going to say both Mexico and Canada. And a lot of suppliers will follow the car companies. So if you have a big assembly plant in, say, Oakville, Ontario, your major suppliers will have operations right nearby. So if you have tariffs on Canada and Mexico, it makes things more expensive for suppliers at a time when the car companies are probably pressuring them of course, they're always pressuring them for rate cuts, but probably they're being squeezed in two directions. The car companies want to pay them less, and yet they have to bear the expense of the tariffs of bringing parts into the United States. So it's, you know, everybody's probably doing their spreadsheets and doing them over and over again and doing a lot of what-if scenarios. And the other thing I want to mention is logistically, then you have the issue of the border getting across the border. And what I've been told is that some of the tariffs are being assessed not only electronically, but actually physically at the border. Mm-hmm. This may not affect suppliers that directly, but it is something to factor in. So it means that if you used to have a two-hour turnaround of your truck full of parts from somewhere in Ontario to somewhere in southeastern Michigan, that could be adding time on. And as we know, time is money.
Exactly. You know, we think that eventually the goal would be to get the auto industry to have more suppliers actually here in the United States building the supplies here. But that doesn't happen overnight. Is that also part of the issue, part of the important discussion in all of this, this story?
Absolutely. So sourcing, you know, which is where the parts come from, is something that everybody is looking at right now, because I think a lot of people sourced in Mexico because labor costs were cheaper. And I've traveled to Mexico to visit some of the automotive operations, and the supply chain, the network, just the highways and things like that, it's pretty clear to get to the borders in Arizona and Texas. So you kind of have built a whole infrastructure about parts flow from Mexico, and the same similar in Canada, but also from places like China and then elsewhere in Asia. And those are parts that might be shipped by tanker, or they could be shipped by plane if there's an emergency. They don't like to ship parts by plane because it's expensive, but you know, if they need them, they'll send them over. And so you have this whole issue of the actual logistics of getting parts into the United States. And then what happens when you get here, where will they go? And I want to, you're probably going to ask me about EVs, and I want to talk about
that. Yes, absolutely.
But one of the things that has been happening over the last few years is that everybody is making the transition over to hybrids and electric vehicles. And we've heard the Trump administration say that they want to eliminate regulations on EVs. So you're a supplier or even a car company, and you've been turning the dial towards this electric future, and you need to keep going if it's actually going to happen. And all of a sudden you're being told, oh, forget about it. Well, that's not a thing that you do when you're a multi-billion dollar company.
Carol Zuniga, the CEO of Higuera Health, has spent her career caring for people who struggle with their mental health.
So we are a comprehensive care provider for behavioral health, and we also provide primary health care just for those people. It's a unique model for persons who receive their behavioral health services with us. So behavioral health meaning mental health, substance use, and we also serve persons with intellectual and developmental disabilities. We serve all age ranges, 0 to older adult, across the lifespan, and we are prepared to help people with mild to moderate, short-term, transitional, situational life issues that happen to so many of us, all the way through to severe and persistent mental illness, which is a much smaller population of people. But specialized care is really critical to the quality of their life.
So, Carol, suffice to say that with all of the information that we now receive with regard to mental health, you guys are probably swamped. You're probably really busy day in and day out.
Well, you know, we always have been.
Wow.
So now it's just out there, which is great. So we've worked really, really hard on stigma and encouraging people to understand that behavioral health is health, and that we all experience issues and problems at some point in our life that some assistance could help. I think what we're experiencing today, which is a wonderful thing, is that with a reduced reluctance to seek care, we're seeing people earlier. So rather than waiting for a crisis, waiting to get to an emergency department, waiting for an illness to actually take hold and impact individual and family lives, people are coming in earlier. So it is really great to see.
So if people come in earlier, are the outcomes better for their overall health, Carol?
Sure, like any other illness, right?
Sure.
The earlier you catch it, the less interference or damage is done. And damage is medical as well. So whether it's a mild issue that if you wait escalates into something more serious for kids, you know, it impacts family life, school life, success, for adults, job, relationships, and, you know, with serious mental illness, we know that as well. The sooner we catch those very serious symptoms, the less brain damage is done, the less damage to lives are done. So absolutely, it's critical.
So is this field something that was important to you when you were younger, as you were growing up? How did you get into this?
You know, people always ask me that. And I just have always been that person kind of figuring out the puzzle. And I was always that engageable person that people came to. I could go pay my bill at JCPenney and the woman taking my money would start telling me her life problems. I think it's just who I am, and it's been a great fit. And I love the leadership opportunities and the capacity to help so many people as I've been building programs and services and helping young people move into careers and develop into the wonderful caretakers that they are.
What role do you think social media plays in people's overall health and mental health, Carol Zuniga?
So I think that social media plays a lot of different roles, right? So on the good end, the communication that has increased on the positive side about the benefits of being able to speak about what's going on, to release, to understand, to find help, to understand that other people are in the same boat. On the downside, you know, we have, especially for our kids, but for our adults as well, the problem with a disconnect with other people. So we see how it impacts our relationships. We see our kids and their communication skills. While they're really good electronically, in person, not so much. So, you know, the impact is wide, and it's such a new, it is really a new way of communicating and technology. We need to understand it better. We need to hone it. We need to find the way to use it positively and then limit those negative impacts.
With regard to the negative impacts, it would seem to me that it can be really tough for teenagers who are constantly using social media and thinking that what they see online is reality, right?
Very true. I always talk about Facebook and, you know, what people don't post their sorrowful moments.
Right.
They don't post the worst things that happen. They don't post their failures. They post their happiness. I'm no different than anyone else. I don't post the fight I had with my husband. I post our dinner out and what a great time we're having, right? So if you don't temper your perceptions of what social media presents to you, if you don't understand that that is the intent, it's essentially advertising, that, you know, you're going to have a misperception of reality.
Coming up next on Women Who Lead, you'll meet Kelly Walgamott, the woman who runs Michigan's Pure Michigan Travel Campaign, and Dr. Ora Peskovitz, the president of Oakland University.
Women Who Lead on WJR with Ann Thomas and Luann Thomas-Ewald. Sponsored by the University of Michigan Health Von Voigtlander Women's Hospital.
Kelly Walgamott is the vice president of Pure Michigan. Her passion is Michigan's all-important travel industry.
One of the big things is the value of travel and tourism to the state. It's a $53 billion industry.
Wow.
With 1 in 17 employees in the state are part of the travel industry. So it's incredibly, the economic impact from travel is incredible for the state, and the importance of travel and tourism to the economy in the state. I think that was, you know, the number one underlier right there at the conference. And number two is that it starts with a visit. We know that when travelers are influenced by the Pure Michigan campaign and they come to visit, they're more likely to want to stay there. They want to, you know, decide to move to Michigan in that destination or go to college or, you know, start a business or even retire. So that is really the power of travel.
Oh, it's so interesting how travel impacts economic development in a state in so many ways. Now, you have been with Travel Michigan since 2011. How great is it that you have, you know, started in one position and now you're running the whole thing. It's very impressive, Kelly, what you've done.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And I'm just, you know, honored that I'm in this role and that I've had the opportunity over nearly almost 14 years to work on this incredible, iconic, and extraordinary campaign. And to continue to move it forward is, again, I'm just really honored and humbled that I have this opportunity to do this.
How did you get into the travel business, Kelly?
Yeah, so, and, you know, it's like one of those, I think, secrets, too. Once you get into the travel industry, you don't want to leave.
Right, it's addicting.
You know, it is. It's like the people are just so passionate and just incredible. The hospitality industry, right? They're so welcoming, yes. Very warm. They're talented. They're smart. They care about our state. And, you know, that passion really makes me want to, you know, do my best that I can for the state. And when it comes to travel and tourism via the Pure Michigan campaign. And I actually started in the automotive industry in public relations right out of high school and had the opportunity, you know, really enjoyed the automotive industry right in our state, the number one economic driver, right, yes. The auto industry, and went to Leo Burnett Company and had a great, just a great opportunity to learn marketing at Leo Burnett for nearly 10 years and happened to see a little posting for Pure Michigan needing a new marketing director. And it was in the Lansing area where I reside. And I was like, oh my gosh, I love that campaign. And I think that's a great opportunity. I'm going to go for it. And the rest is history.
Oh, that's incredible. So over the years, what kind of changes have you seen with regard to travel?
Yeah, you know, I think they kind of continue, right? When I started travel, nearly 14 years ago, the challenges that we have today are not the same that we had back then. And, you know, from not only, you know, what's going on with the pandemic, right, and the closes up travel to, you know, geopolitical influences that are not directly targeting travel, but travel is a casualty, right, that's what's going on. So I think there's, you know, a number of challenges that we continue to deal with. And I've got to tell you, the competition that we had when I started is not nearly at all like it is now. And I think that is something that is continues to be a challenge. And we also see a lot of destinations as well that like to align with Pure Michigan, right? And like to try to make their own Pure Michigan campaign, which we know they can't because our state's the best.
And we now turn to Dr. Ora Peskovitz, the dynamic leader of Oakland University.
46 of the 50 hottest jobs in Michigan, this is in Michigan, require a bachelor's degree or more. So we have to dispel the myths about jobs in Michigan and about the correlation between jobs and education. Trade schools are good for some students, but not if we want to change Michigan's economy. And we want to put ourselves in the most productive states in the country. And higher education is the path to individual prosperity and the state's economic prosperity.
And Ora is one of my favorite people. I've watched her from afar. I've watched her up close. And Ora, looking back at all of your roles, I've watched you in all of your roles as the president of Riley Children's Hospital. I don't know if you know that.
I did not know that.
At Michigan Medicine and now at Oakland University. Talk to me about that path and what you are most proud of.
Well, I do think it's interesting that I've had a diverse path. And, you know, as you know, because we share a path, a love for children, I started life as a pediatric endocrinologist. And I think part of what allowed me to sort of have this diverse career is the willingness to go wherever I was needed and be, I would say, resilient. And I think that is an advantage. You know, one of my favorite books I would tell you is a book called Range by a guy named David Epstein, who says that the best athletes are not the ones that start in one athletic area and stick to that sport, but are willing to take on different kinds of sports. And I don't think I'm particularly smart, but I would say that...
I might disagree with that.
Well, I do.
I do. No, I don't think I was ever the smartest, you know, in my class. In medical school, I was one of only, you know, it was an era when there were not very many girls or women in medical school. There were only 12 women in my class in medical school. It was a different time.
Yes.
Yeah. But I was, I would say... resilient and willing to try different things. And so you can, as you said, Luann, you know, I have had a varied career. And I think that has allowed me to be willing to be entrepreneurial, risk-taking, and adaptable and interested in many different things. And I think that has served me personally well. But I would also say, and I'm not athletic, but I would say... I have a big interest in athletics, and I think that has been very helpful. And I think that's very good to be able to use what I call transferable skills across different industries, different businesses, different parts of academia, to be applicable to different things. And when I have failed at different things, which I have, I've taken the lessons that I've learned to apply them to the next thing. And that has benefited me personally. And I, you know, I've had disappointments, but then I apply the lessons to the next thing.
And you are a visible leader. Whenever in all of these roles that I've seen you, you are out front. Any event.
I've noticed that too.
I go to at Oakland University, whether it's a graduation, sports, the Nursing Nightingale Awards, Aura's there. She's there. I really believe she lives there. I think there's a bedroom somewhere where she...
Well, I do live on campus.
So. Is that your philosophy, though, to be present?
Yes. I mean, but I'm a very... You know, I'm an extrovert. I love what I do. I believe in loving what you do. I believe that successful people are happy people. And they have to be happy at what they do. And if they find that they are unhappy, they need to do something about that. So I have a philosophy that I call the four P's. You know, if you find yourself not happy at what you're doing, you've got to figure out why you're not happy. And then you need to change something to get happy.
You've been listening to Women Who Lead. Join us next month when we highlight the remaining six of this year's Women Who Lead honorees. I'm Ann Thomas, and on behalf of my co-host, Luann Thomas-Ewald, thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.